Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, CEOs and founders that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners will know, I am a CEO and founder myself of a business called PocDoc, which means that I have a little bit of knowledge about the space. PocDoc are the partner that helps us put the show on, so thank you very much to them. PocDoc is on a mission to deliver entire diagnostic pathways, including quantitative blood tests digitally via the PocDoc app and the PocDoc tests. If you'd like to find out more information, please go to PocDoc.co. Thanks as ever to everyone listening live on the amazing UK Health Radio. Thank you particularly to Johan, the founder and CEO of the station, who he just told me before we went on air that he had a big birthday last week. So I want to wish him happy birthday and all the best. He's an incredible individual. He's been hugely inspirational to me and putting the show together and helping to get this show together and kind of creating all of the amazing stuff that we've managed to do over the last nearly 2 years. So happy birthday, Johan. All the best. Also, thank you very much to everyone who's listening on any of the podcast channels. Apple is blowing up for us at the moment, but Spotify is still going well. We're across all of them. And on average, we have listeners in over 40 countries every month, which is incredible. And we really appreciate everybody listening. I think part of it is due to the breadth of interviews and breadth of guests that we have talking about all kinds of different things. So last show that we did with Carmelo Insulaco of Rapid Health got a huge reaction, actually, especially his take on the differences between Rapid Health and Babylon Health, and his view on the demise of Babylon Health. So we got that show away literally 2 days after the expose in the Sunday Times about the fall of Babylon Health. So if you haven't heard that one, go check it out. And this week we are staying with GPs and GP surgeries. Because we've got two guests on today who I've known for a couple of years, actually. They were on one of the NHS Digital Accelerators the year after PocDoc was on it. So a couple of really fantastic guys, Raj Kohli and Pete Huang, who are co-founders of a business called Health Tech One. Now, Health Tech One automates repetitive processes for NHS staff and businesses. Now, that may not sound massively glamorous on the face of it. However, it is critical because when you consider that the NHS has 590 million patient contacts per year, small changes in efficiency, reduction of repetitive tasks can have a huge impact on backlogs, patient safety, patient outcomes, staff well-being, staff satisfaction. And as we all know, the statistics that are mentioned in the press around staff satisfaction, patient satisfaction with the NHS are at an all-time low. And staff turnover and vacancies in the NHS are at an all-time high. So anything that helps reduce those is obviously going to go down very, very well. So Raj, Pete, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, thank you so much for having us on. We are well.
Good.
Very well. And happy birthday to Johan.
Yes, happy birthday to Johan.
Happy birthday, Johan. Yeah, Johan. Nice. I love it. You look like, for the listeners, you can't see, but you look like you're in a phone booth. Is that correct? Or where are you?
We are in a phone booth inside my parents' GP practice. So I don't know.
Oh, sweet.
Maybe you can have a look.
I can see it. Yeah.
Here we go.
Hello.
Here we go. Yeah.
We've just got a little mini tour there for everyone on the radio.
So we're based inside my mum and dad's GP practice in East London in Stratford. And we've got a room in here, and inside it, we have packed in, you know, a whole series of former founders, incredible engineers, doctors, all working on sectioning up these repetitive processes that exist within healthcare and automating them.
So let's dig into this, because I think you guys have a pretty interesting journey to where you got to today. So like, what, give us like the potted history of sort of how you guys came together and why you landed on the problem set that you've landed on solving. Because it's not necessary. I think like most people probably intuitively understand slash believe, oh, the NHS could probably be more efficient, right? At like a fairly macro level, but that's a long way away from finding anything that's specific enough to build a business around. So what's your journey been like?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the first thing to say is that it was a journey of friendship. So me and Pete met in secondary school. We went to a school called Dartford Grammar.
Dartford Grammar School.
That's right.
Shout out Dartford Grammar School.
Yeah, shout out DGS. Here we go. I don't know if we were that close in school, but we, out of school, online, playing Halo.
Super close.
Best
friends. online. One of those hidden relationships.
We'd run home after school and we'd get the game, you know, we'd get the Xbox out and get the headsets on.
Okay.
And then we go. And I think the way we describe our lives is that they've kind of, you know, like all great friendships, they sort of like spiral in and out of each other. You go to different universities, but we ended up living together post-university and started jobs in startups. Pete worked in, what was it, Ikuku back then?
Many. I've worked for so many startups. Pete's worked in
so many. So many startups. And I worked for like this hair business and then went different ways again. I went into Accenture. Pete went into Monzo Bank because he was a software engineer there. And then there was this moment where we kind of decided that we'd leave our jobs to in the pursuit of doing our life's best work. And we didn't really have a big problem that we wanted to solve ourselves. So we did what everyone does, which is, you know, go solve somebody else's problem. And we set up this little startup consultancy and we helped other companies grow and, you know, find more customers and, you know, do things differently, build product partway through the pandemic, where mum and dad, who run a GP practice, basically said, hey, you guys know digital stuff, like why don't you give us a hand?
Well, I think they needed more than a hand.
Yeah,
it was a pretty difficult time for
I think you might be understating things slightly. <Yeah.
laughs> They were like, everything's going online and, you know, yeah, like need some help. And I was a bit resistant because I was like, oh, I don't want to work mum and dad, but mum spoke to Pete because I've known you for 2 years. And mum was like, you know, you should do this. And Pete was like, yeah, actually. And yeah, he sat me down and he said, you know, dude, I know you don't want to work with family, but this is something that is really amazing and can be something you can be very prideful of.
And now, Rogers, I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, now I'm this fucking
What people probably don't know is that when we put the show together, what we do is we get like bios of the people coming on. And the bit about your parents' GP is like the first line of the bio.
I lead now with I'm a third generation healthcare worker. Grandparents came in from India, worked as nurses up in Newcastle in the NHS. And dad's GP, mum also works in GP practice. But and I've worked as essentially an administrator in the GP practice as a kid, but also later in life.
What was it that kind of like inspired you guys to quit your jobs and start the consultancy? Like, was there like a kind of a Damascene moment or an epiphany of any kind where you thought, you know what, this is it, I'm done, I can't audit another spreadsheet or like whatever it was?
I think as friends, we've liked working on projects and there's something about value fit and doing our life's best work. Timing's so important. So we had a real timing there that we could work together on. And we didn't just jump over. We're actually quite calculated. We did little small test projects. We worked on other small things, ensured that we had a first contract before even jumping out into the wild.
Okay.
So it was definitely incremental and we call it a helix. So over time, it wound closer and closer to the point now where we've got a business and we live together. So you can't get, we're essentially married in that sense. There was a real dawning reality.
A bit like you, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I know how that feels, guys. I did the marriage thing before the business, but it ultimately ends up in the same place.
And, uh,
There was a real transition moment though. So when mum and dad asked for some help, we were given essentially full agency to process, innovate and access everything. So for 6 months, we had the chance to zoom out, look around, learn, explore, actually do the admin work. A lot of it was doing admin work, getting trained up as NHS employees ourselves.
Okay.
And the learning point was, oh my God, what
a mind-boggling amount of admin. What
like
fuck?
how because I think again, like it's one of those things where I think people probably have some sort of sense at a macro level,
yeah,
but have never come across, have never like moved across the boundary to go behind the curtain to see what it's like. So like what was it like when you got onboarded as healthcare assistants or whatever you were?
Yeah,
admin,
I mean,
assistants.
Let's take the first process in the NHS. In order to get access to healthcare, first you need to be registered with the GP practice, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the first step.
Yes, everyone knows that.
Right, yeah. So you have to go to your GP. Typically, you have to go to your GP practice and you pick up a purple paper form called your GP form. Or you can go online, if they have that online functionality, and submit an online form. But no matter what you do, some poor receptionist has to manually key those data points, those 100 data points that you'll put on your online form or on your GMS1 form. Plus,
is it 100 points? It's 100 data points.
It's 100 data points, right?
For registering with a GP, 100.
Well, because the core registration details is actually less than that, about 25. But because the first point of entry is a great moment to get lots of details on your patients, you know, like their height, weight, BMI.
Right, okay. They use it to take a baseline, kind of.
They use it to take a baseline. It's your baseline, you know, sort of data entry. And so these poor receptionists across the country are manually keying in 100 data points on for every single, you know, record that comes through. So, you know, take an average university practice. They'll do, you know, thousands of, they might do 5,000 registrations over a university season, right? And
wow,
they're keying in 500,000 data points, some poor receptionist, right? Over
that's insane.
4 months, you know,
and that's mad.
That is a drop in the ocean of general practice.
So how many days or hours after you started doing this did you realize that there was an issue? Like how soon into the process were you when you were like, oh, we're on something here?
I think it was a slow transition, but there definitely was a big decision point. I think we downloaded the Uber Eats app and got a curry delivered in 20 minutes.
Okay.
From registration to delivery. And we thought, how come some of our closest, you know, relatives they're taking weeks to get registered. Healthcare should not be like this. So, it should be like this app.
Going back to the registration piece, right? Because it was what we always like to do on the show is like talk about technical things and talk about operational things. But that one particular thing, seeing as you mentioned it, what is the downstream impact on patients of that particular inefficiency?
I mean, the first one is an inability to access healthcare. So the first is that you're trying to get access to your GP to then be able to ask for an appointment and all that sort of stuff. But until you're on your clinical system, right?
They can't see you. You can't book a...
They don't have your data. They don't have your record. They're not going to book you in for an online consultation, right? You know, essentially, that's the first barrier. And because you've got to wait for the receptionist to key your details into the clinical system, right? So you could be waiting a week. You could be waiting a month sometimes.
Yeah,
you had that 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks, right?
6 weeks you had.
We've seen 6 weeks, for patients to get registered, especially over university periods where you get thousands of registrations all at one period of time, right?
Right.
And then, you know, you've got a team of 10 working, you know, Monday to Sunday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., just like keying in data.
So is that what happens? Is that the current solution, is they get some kind of short-term bodies in to just code stuff?
Work.
Yeah, they work overtime, evenings, weekends, and they have staples of paper, right? Like every form is 5 or 6 pages stapled together and they're just getting them done one by one.
Yeah, this is in every university practice across the country.
Three solid months.
Wow.
Yeah, apart from ours, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
Apart from ours. That's what they're doing. Yeah.
Wow.
There's a great story about this, which is our first university practice, Sue Mountford, shout out.
Go on,
he
Sue,
had
God
not
bless.
taken...
Go on, Sue.
not taking a holiday since she started at the GP practice, and she's done registrations for 20 years. Because during that period, you're not taking time off.
Wow.
And then we came in to kind of help. It was very difficult. We're early days, but we managed to help her
Yeah.
take a holiday.
Yeah, she went to,
Yeah.
where did she go to? She went to
Costa del Sol?
the plains of Andalusia in Spain. That's it. That's where she went.
Wow. Do you know what? I think she's had that trip cooking for a while. That's a very
Yeah.
specific location,
Very
isn't
good.
it?
Yeah. She's been waiting for the
20
opportunity.
years.
Yeah. Honestly, amazing,
Yeah.
amazing woman.
Yeah.
So, okay. So like your you the you were working in Europe, so it was COVID was happening. You were in your parents, Raj, said, "Hey, look, we could do with some help maybe." What was it for that? Like, was there no how much sort of IT training support guidance is there for GPs, or are they just left to figure it out themselves? They can either do it or not do it, but it's sort of on them to puzzle it out.
Yeah, I mean, like pretty much, most, I assume most primary care organizations, we have a very clunky old school clinical system built in the 1990s, right?
Right.
And there is some elements of training. There's lots of training of quite available. There's these even training support units that are created to give training, but you've got such a high turnover of staff in general
Okay.
practice, right? I've personally hired 10 people, over the course of a year into my parents' surgery administrators, and only one of them remains because it's such a difficult job. Like, you're there as an administrator, the work isn't exactly riveting,
Right.
and you're also getting a torrent of sometimes abuse from patients at
No
times.
one's very happy, are they, really?
Yeah,
Let's be
like
honest.
it's difficult, and the systems that you're using, I don't want to swear, but they
Yeah,
are
it's a family show. We don't swear. That's the one rule.
yeah,
Oh,
yeah,
stoddy. That's
yeah.
stoddy.
It's it's it, they're not so great, and what does that mean? Well, it means that it's very difficult to get your work done, and you don't feel like you're really making a dent in the constant stream of stuff, and people leave.
And what had been done up until this point to try and make this situation better? Because presumably the situation was known to many people. So it wasn't an unknown issue that there were huge staffing banks of people coding bits of paper in endlessly. Was there anything that had sort of been done? Anyone tried to address it? Or was it just sort of too mundane an issue?
Hair on fire is the way to think about general practice. When you're inundated with front desk, middle desk, back office nonstop, you can't hire. You're just caught in a treading water state. So
Right.
we're privileged to be able to think about technology, build it, test it with users, run through analyses. But when you're in primary care and
Yeah, it's hard to change the wheels of the car whilst the car is driving, right? It's defeating. But also, like, there are some limitations, right? In that, for the more interested health tech users, is that when you've got very old school clinical systems that are a monopoly over the market, they're not incredibly incentivized to change or open up their various APIs
no. Do you mean like EMIS System One, those type of people, without naming names?
without naming names, yeah,
Yeah.
like that sort
It
of thing.
is a I've often felt it's a and we've come across this type of thing with PocDoc. It is an odd situation where you have a public health service, but that has a private access layer, if you like, in front of it or around it. It's quite a strange one to try and get your head around.
I mean, two system providers have 90 plus percent of the market. That you wouldn't see that in any other market at all. So they're so deeply embedded, and they don't listen to users enough, I think, which is what we tried to bring. We have so much time to listen and to build for what people are asking for.
So it was it okay, so partly they had the GPs themselves were is that also GPs are highly fragmented in a way. So they're all individual. Is your mum and dad's place a single place, or have they got a number?
It's a group of four practices,
Okay.
so about 50,000 patients in East London. So I think they're highly fragmented, which is a blessing for for people who want to join healthcare, right?
Yes.
Because you've got individual decision-making units that can make a decision about whether to use your software or not, whether it makes a difference to their lives. And you know, a lot of GP partners talk to me about, like, oh, you know, it's you know, it's very difficult to be in general practice, but there's also something very exciting about the autonomy that you can have as a GP practice, because you really can change things.
Okay. Yeah. So we are going to go for our first commercial break right now, and we will be back in 2 minutes with Raj and Pete from Health Tech One, who are automating general practice to remove repetitive tasks at scale. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guests, Raj and Pete, co-founders of Health Tech One. So before the break, we were getting into some of the stuff around the kind of issues that you solve or have kind of landed upon. I want to use that, if we can, to give us, if you can give everyone an idea of about some of the other issues you found, and then we can get into your growth, which I know has been pretty meteoric. At this point, I've read some of the statistics that it's potentially outstripping some of the other more established players in the market, but I'll let you guys dig into that. But in addition to the registration piece, which I think is an amazing example, what were the other ones that you sort of came across and you thought, oh my goodness, we're now building up a set of use cases or user stories where we can really go to town with a software solution?
There were so many on the project, as we did kind of a loose six-month consultancy project. And I think triage was one of them.
Okay.
Within that side. It's not a place we jumped into because we noticed there's so many players. Everyone wants to jump into triage, just to name one of the issues. One thing that we're looking at next, actually, is lab reports. So we automate registrations and patients and practices save that time and it's better for them. And we're helping admin staff. We want to help doctors because we're not getting doctors anytime soon. They're really overworked. And with this problem of lab reports, it's something they are pretty drained by. So to describe what this is any diagnostic that comes back, may it be like a COVID test, a blood test, x-ray, it comes into an inbox. So imagine doctors have their own email inbox for all of the lab reports that come in. Every day, they're getting about 100 every single day. And without enough appointments and so much demand, they're often doing it on the weekends or doing it in the evenings. Not the best work. I can't imagine us doing our best work on Friday night or early on a Sunday, but they're still doing it. But these are crucial bits of work. Mm. It's figuring out if your parameters, and I'm sure you know with the diagnostic yourself, slightly off is quite different to something very off. It could be the early signs of something really important. So we need our doctors working on that piece. But in that inbox, just like our email inbox, there's lots of really standard things you could do quite easily. Mm-hmm. We estimate about 20 to 50% are very protocolizable, low risk, that the doctor really doesn't need to see, but they're still sitting there reading it, filing it away and spending a few minutes per lab report. We think we can help with automating the stuff that is really safe and low risk and get more doctor time back, really, because that is a real stretch. Clinicians are very stretched as well as admin staff.
So what's interesting about, oh, sorry, Raj, go on. You're going to say something.
It's about a shift away from our clinicians and NHS staff doing the admin to them setting the parameters by which the work gets done.
It's like working. You want everyone to be working to the top of their grade.
Is the
phrase, right? So if you've got doctors, you want them doing doctor things that will make the difference to patients and trying to solve for everything else, if that makes sense, right?
Oh, totally, yeah. And there's general consistency stuff, like doing the right course of action every single time is quite difficult.
It's a safety net for, you know, if you can automate a whole load of stuff and make sure it's done exactly right according to a protocol, it's a very it creates a safety net for general practice, as one clinician described it to me.
So we're going to take a slight detour here. So apologies to everyone that's more of a general listener, because we're going to go deep into this issue of writing into the patient record at this point, because what you've landed on there is a topic very close to my heart. and one that we're sort of have been working our way through with our NHS partners on the POCDOC side of things. So are you referring to the DocMan? The DocMan, that you're referring to DocMan where it gets dropped into the inbox, or is this a separate?
Separate, this is lab reports. So ultrasound, a blood test, you know, these are direct results coming back from a lab. So
into an inbox that's associated with the practice.
Exactly. Well, within EMIS, or
it's not an email inbox. It's within the clinical system. There is an inbox. Yeah.
Think of it as an email inbox, but it's not. Okay. Not exactly that.
So it's going back into the primary care system, but in a generic, untriaged, unfiltered place. Yeah. Right.
To put a patient story to bring it to life, imagine, you know, someone that needs drug monitoring. They're taking a particular drug. The doctor would like to know the impact of that drug on them. So they'll do a 3-monthly blood test or 6-month blood test.
Well, lipids is a classic one where you put someone on a medium to high intensity statin and then they have a liver function test after 3 months.
Exactly. And what happens? Most of them are normal and don't need any action, but they are still being read by the doctor. What the doctor really wants to know is when something really needs their attention, they spring to action and they work on that. And then the other stuff, kind of file it away, deal with it, is the kind of goal that they can kind of get to. So that's the patient journey. They take that blood test because they're on that drug. They go to the lab, get their blood taken, and then that result from the lab will eventually go back to the GP practice, go into their system. DocMan is more document management. So any letter that comes into GP practice, be from the pharmacy and maybe from the patient themselves, often it's the hospital, lands into what looks like another email inbox. And you're totally right, that's a huge problem. Like they get even more documents every day, and it's a filing. Like we think of scanning being one of these typical office jobs that we don't do anymore. It still happens. We're still scanning paper.
The amount of letters they get sent to your GP practice. There's this like big blue sack that arrives every sort of like day, and it's just full of post and registration records that need to be keyed into the system. It's mind-boggling.
But how do you break? I mean, because some of these issues are so big and so prevalent. Like, how do you? I mean, I know it's like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? But how do you get your head around the idea of how to start with these things, because they're so multifaceted and they're so big at one view, but they're also so small at the other. So
I think if we were taking an MBA approach, we'd really have struggled. If we were like, oh, what's this big market that we want to go after?
Yes, exactly, right.
I think we would have really struggled, but it wasn't like that. It was like, oh, what's the problem mom and dad are facing? And then we're like dealing with that problem, and that uncovers another problem, and then we just get started and working on it. And you know, I'd love to say that me and Pete were like such, you know, crazy visionaries that we're like, you know, we did a strategy session and they were like, yeah, healthcare, that's the market. You know, first point of entry, that's great. GP practices is a great place to start, but the honest answer not that at all. We just thought about like, what do we actually really care about? What could we spend the next 20, 30 years of our lives like throwing our time into, you know, chewing glass is the phrase, right? Really like pushing the barriers. And we just felt like healthcare was this like beautiful space where that could happen. And it started by helping mom and dad.
It's a lot based on trust. So with our first product, I think we're in like 350 practices up and down, growing quite quickly on referrals, but they trust us because we're trying to do our best job ever, absolutely best job. And with this second product, they kind of just talk to us in, you know, with full trust that, hey, great on registrations, that's admin, can we move on to something else? And it came naturally from the crowd. Like
So your first product is the registration product. How are you solving? So you very eloquently explained the problem. So how do you solve that problem?
It's very simple. An online form, right, that now exists. So a patient can fill out an online form on the GP practice website. But the details of that magically go into the clinic system. And they do, and it does all of the process steps that you might expect for safeguarding, for example. So say if a child was to register at the GP practice, we would do a check, run a check on the clinical system to see if the person of stated parental responsibility was also on the clinical system before we registered the child. And these are the same things that me and Pete did when we were manually doing the registration process like that.
Okay.
Um, Another example would be, hey, patient puts that they're a smoker on their registration form. We ask them, would you like smoking cessation advice? If they say yes, then we send them the smoking cessation advice and then code the fact that we've sent it back onto the clinical system too, which is one of these micro incentives that GP practices need to hit or targets.
Yeah, the QOF.
The QOF. You got it. Yes. Yeah. The QOF.
Quality adjusted framework.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Outcomes framework. No?
Yeah. Yeah.
Outcomes framework. Sorry. Yeah. It's QALIS. It's the, framework. My bad.
Oh, good.
Often it doesn't get done. So I think we talked about 100 data points. I think in reality, when there's 5 or 6 pieces of paper, admin staff don't have the time, or patients often, and they may skip over it. This smoking cessation advice, what would the admin staff do? They'll literally have to write an email. They'll literally have to type a text.
Oh, wow. Right. Like, so each time, completely.
For an email, it's definite. For text message, they've got templates, but it's still a very manual. Imagine you ran a flower shop and you don't have any of these fantastic marketing tools. You need to manually send a piece of communication to every single customer.
Right. That's where you are.
Yeah. Commerce have had this for 20 years, and GP practices are using people to send this sort of stuff out.
How did it get to this? How did it end up at this situation?
There's been such a lack of incredible, like, healthcare companies that have started in general practice, right? Or in, I think the perception, and we definitely got this when we did our fundraising processes, like all the investors like, oh yeah, UK healthcare, are you sure? What about the US market? That's the really big one, etc. Honestly, I feel like so many companies have not had the guts to just like stick out this market,
right.
And so we don't have incredible software organizations. I think there's like one company that in general practice that I think has really transformed the space, and that's probably Accurix, right, in recent history, who've done an incredible job and actually have delivered quality products that people love and use on a daily basis. But otherwise, I'm bereft to think of others
that... And is that because there's something particular about the primary care space that's off-putting to founders, engineers, investors, you think, or is it sort of just a combination of different factors?
Yeah, I think there's a combination. I think people generally view general practice as having a very small budget, right? And it's very true. Like it's very underfunded in compared to the larger healthcare system, right? It's probably what, like 7 to 8% of the budget it goes into primary care, even though 90% of patient contacts happen in primary care, right?
Yeah,
it's one of these. When we saw Wes Streeting sort of talk about it, and he was saying, hey, that's something that needs to change or flip. When we saw him sort of present, and it was like. And it totally resonated. But so I think there's that perception. But also, I just think, people just, there's this myth that it's so difficult. But actually, if you build something that has patient outcomes, that saves people time and is efficient, it creates efficiencies, like cost efficiencies for general practice or in any healthcare setting, really, like your product, has a very good chance of selling. And I suppose let this be the call to other potential founders out there, get yourself
involved. What's clear is that we have this discussion over and over again, but what's obvious is that there are elements in the NHS that are the sort of the areas of single biggest need, if you like, in the UK healthcare system, and it's about how do you access them and how do you address those. But there's no question that there is the areas of largest need are within the NHS. I mean, if you're in a situation where you have to hire teams of people to code bits of paper, but because you can't connect up an online form to a database.
That's essentially what it is.
which is,
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is basics, right?
Yeah. And we had the same thing with PocDoc when we started to sort of allow healthcare professionals to use the app to collect information during a health screening. Mm-hmm. It was previously where they were writing it down and then they'd have to keep the piece of paper, and then the piece of paper would have to go somewhere to then be written up into something. And you're talking about sort of a multi-day week process. And we didn't necessarily even think that the data collection piece of the app was really the piece that would move the needle for people, but it really does. And then that's when you realize, oh, wow, you know, maybe there's different levels here of where the problems are. And they're not quite at the level I thought they were, or maybe some of our solutions solve other problems along the way.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so many, this is like the word that comes up all the time, but workforce, like we are very much a workforce solution because we just give practice staff more time back. We're doing repetitive. We automate about 90% of the forms now. So they don't have to, imagine you have a piece of work to do, but 90% of it has disappeared, literally disappeared. It frees you up, at least like the stress and attention. And
they get a bit scared sometimes with all their spare time.
I think we're making the assumption that a single person in general practice is not busting a gut. Like they are working so hard, and there's an unrelenting amount of work to do.
Never ends. Never ending.
Yeah, it's never ending, right? Like, you know, they spend their time on other stuff, and it's like, it's really beautiful sometimes, you know, instead of doing registration forms. Now we had this one guy, Robin, he started spending time with some of the elderly patients to make sure that they could use the NHS app and manage their prescriptions that way. And
right, it was just, like actual proactive healthcare,
dude,
like actually helping people.
There's so many stories like this where actually, like, you've got this really experienced registration clerk who's been in general practice for 20 plus years. Take Sue, she's been in practice for 20 plus years. Has seen it evolve and change, is now doing some, you know, valuable things for patients.
Sue, this year, she's now on campus at university getting students to look after their health.
Oh, great. So,
she's out there with an iPad. Imagine that. Yeah.
Going from
showing them pictures of her holiday in Andalusia.
yeah. Getting on with the kids.
Yeah. but I think, I mean, I love stories like that. They're very human, and they show the impact of a simple solution that's built to solve a problem and built to user requirements. So do you guys feel like a lot of the existing infrastructure in the space was potentially built by software systems engineers without really thinking about the future problems that would or could happen? And it was a less building against user requirements and user stories, more sort of building it from the point of view of a technologist, if that makes any sense, or an engineering mindset.
Yeah, I mean, Pete can give his perspective, but it was just 30 years ago. I mean, like, look,
right,
they tried.
They did a great job before our time, but they did a great job,
right, back in the day, right? Like, right, 30 years ago,
the best they could do, and then they built off of it.
They built the best they could do, and you know, I think generally people are good natured and trying really hard. It's
still a solid system. You compare it to secondary care systems, and it's like, again, light years ahead, they'd say. But it's built as a data store with 100 functions slapped on top of it, instead of what we currently need, which is a system that helps us with work, that is work optimized. And you look at modern EHRs in the world, and they don't just show and take data, they take the next step, which is what we're trying to do. We get registrations, which is data, but then we take the next step, which is send you a smoking cessation device.
We've got to go for our final commercial break in a second. Yeah. But when we get back, let's pick up that conversation about an EHR, because particularly in the UK, that way has been sort of littered with disasters and, you know, wrecks. However, I think it's something that may be coming back, or maybe like a destination that we need to get to. So it'd be great to get your take on that. We will be back after our final commercial break with Raj and Pete from HealthTech One. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guests today, Raj and Pete, who are the co-founders of Health Tech One. So before the break, we started to talk about this idea of an electronic health record. And Raj, you also mentioned that I think I can't remember whether it was Raj or Pete, you mentioned that the the secondary prevention, the secondary care system is actually even further behind than the primary care system. And so how, in the context of everything that you're doing, this idea of an electronic health record is quite a buzzword, obviously. And I suspect it's one of those words that means slightly different things to different people. And because in theory, there are electronic health records already that exists. The data is existing as an electronic format, but some people think it might be something different. So what's your view on that whole issue? And yeah, let's start there. What's your view on it?
Oh, huge question.
I got halfway through it and I was trying to make it more specific, and then I just backed out.
And, yeah.
Look, electronic health records are really important, right? They are where all our data is stored. What's missing in for healthcare organizations is like a workflow automation that sits on top that does all the administration work. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're like aspiring to build. We've thought about, like, you know, of course, like every health tech company has thought about building an electronic health record.
Yeah, it's like the Holy Grail, right? Or it's like, yeah, why don't we could be the ones. It could be us.
it could be us, yeah. Literally, Pete, when we're on mute over the commercial break, he goes, I promise I won't say that we're going to build a health electronic. <Yeah.
laughs> The urge in me was wanting to say.
Yeah. Do we have it? I don't understand. Like, that's what it means different things to different people.
Yeah, sure. So electronic health record is essentially a database of patients' details, but also an interface for clinicians to document your details and do the work that they need to do.
I think that this is how I think about it. It's that with a universality to it. All of your health interactions and universal access at any point in the healthcare system. So a primary care can access the same file, secondary care can access the same file, social care, everything goes into that one place and everybody has that access. That's what it means to me, but I don't know whether that's right or wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, technically, like, there are a lot, each company creates their own electronic health record.
Right.
US, there are like 900 electronic health records that exist.
Great. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it sounds, yeah. That's why they've got all sorts of integration challenges. In the UK, we probably are like, you know, less than 50, right? Let's just say.
Yeah.
That actually have any meaningful significance. So it's a much better space to build, you know, build things in that regard. But like the thought was like, do we need to build another electronic health record? What one record to rule them all?
Like, yeah, exactly. Like the Lord of the Records.
Yeah, Lord of the Records. Yeah, is that what we need, or do we need something that like helps the ones that we've got at the moment communicate better between them?
Yeah,
I think that's our aspiration.
I could throw some thoughts in here. So
please,
just to lock it into primary care, not secondary. We only hear from GPs that have worked in secondary care that it's a world apart. So
yeah,
build health tech too when that comes, when we go to secondary care.
Yeah.
I come from a modern perspective, which is, you know, I've worked in many tech startups and most recently saw Monzo. I was at Monzo and they built a bank in a space of decades old banks, like very old institutions. And also have a bit of a marketing automation background. Anyway, other worlds have incredible software solving similar problems at scale, cheaply, and very well. So when I think about managing population health, I often think about marketing and I go, well, if you need to send messages to 100 people about some behavior change, you know, read this article, people are doing this, but for their new book that they're releasing using MailChimp and they're automating it whilst they're sleeping. So there's this weird feeling of the current record works, let's improve what we have. There's also we're transferring knowledge from other industries where we've seen other technologies absolutely own this problem. It's a solved problem. It's just maybe it's a distribution thing, not a development thing. So the core functions I think are not good enough. Like a doctor needs to be able to see pertinent information immediately. It's you're scrolling through 5 pages of lots of different texts. You don't have good graphs. You can't see images well. You need to switch context. La-di-da, even viewing the record, it's not optimized. And then that's a single patient level. Once you go to population health, it's even worse. And we're now exporting data into spreadsheets and then using spreadsheets.
What happens?
So you'd export, say, all the diabetics that need a health check. And then you give it to a person. Yeah. And like in the 90s with sales, you're just going down the list one by one. And this is, you know, this is solved. And I'm not happy that this isn't solved at all. And I do have a personal take on it to think that we deserve better in this. It's like Stockholm syndrome. We're victims of like just accepting what's there and believing that.
Do the people within the system think that way too? Have they been sort of conditioned to believe this couldn't be better as well? Or are they like railing against it, being like, oh my God, I really wish we could figure this out. This drives me mad.
I think it's like so many people have come along over the years and said, oh, we're going to fix this problem. And
Right.
So, you know, they've heard it said many times, never delivered. Right.
Right.
And this is it, right? Like when we work in general practice, like the fact that we've actually built something that solves someone's problem, like people go apeshit because it's like, wow, this actually worked. You didn't just like
sell. It wasn't like snake oil. It actually did it.
Oil. Yeah. The bar is really low, right? And how sad is that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that's the case, but also. Yeah, it's just like
So on that topic, like when you've been talking to people about your first product, the automation of the record registration documentation, have there been people that have been sort of pushing back on it, or what have the objections been, if any? Like, I'm just curious to see if anyone's actually had any real logical, or is it just has there not been any? Just curious.
Yeah, honestly, like if the difficulty is getting time with a GP, like somebody within a GP practice to give us the airtime to talk about the problem and how we're solving it. But once that happens, like pretty much everybody's like, oh my God, yeah, let's start tomorrow, you know?
Mm. Interesting. It's really interesting because the kind of perceived wisdom, like you said earlier in the show, as that, oh, it's really hard to sell, it's really hard to work in primary care. GP is super fragmented, it's really difficult, so on and so forth.
Not absolute nonsense. Like, you know, GP practices are full of like super innovative, like people who want to change the way they work, and they just need it's on the responsibility of the providers to actually give them something worth using. And like they are under so much pressure at the moment. Things need to change, and there is a burning desire to change stuff.
We're willing to really deeply understand the problem, and that resonates. It's very cliche, right, in health or any tech business, but like we literally did, you know, thousands of registrations manually on one of these two.
I love that, and I think actually you'd be really surprised about how many people or businesses founders just aren't prepared or it doesn't even occur to them to do that. And maybe they don't have the opportunity. I mean, you had an opportunity because your parents ran a GP surgery, but you still took it and you still did it. I mean, you could have given up after doing 10 registrations. You could have.
Not like I wanted to.
But I'm a huge believer in whether you call it eating glass, Raj, like you said, or you have to live in the customers or potential customers. You have to really get under the skin of it. And if you're not prepared to do that, then maybe you shouldn't be focusing on that area.
Totally true.
And I imagine that gets you quite a lot of soft, unspoken credibility within what you're talking about, because you actually have done it. You're not just technology people that have tried to build a product and sell it in. You actually went through it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that just comes across in the way you speak about a particular subject. You know, you'll know the nuances of a process. You'll know what their concerns are even before you've spoken to them. And that's, you know, that's just going all in on the problem and really getting that.
They've thought, I wish someone else could do this for me for decades. Like, the registration screen has not changed in 10 years.
Mm.
So they've been doing the same thing year in, year out, and they've thought the same thing: can someone just do this for me? Mm. And when we come into the conversation and say, hey, we can do it for you, they quiz us on whether you know it well, etc.
Right.
But
are you just are you just are you just a another software website designer or company that wants to?
Are you going to make me do all this work to get started? Have I got to redesign your process for you, mate? And
right.
What's the lock-in? What's the exit fee? What's the ongoing fee?
Yeah,
right.
We say, look, we charge you if we do the work and there's no lock-in. You can leave whenever you which is quite different. Not different in the consumer world. You could get Netflix Prime or whatever.
Yeah, you can you imagine the Netflix lock-in? Like, no, mate, it's 2 years.
Yeah.
That's it. That's 2 years.
It's 2 years, right?
It wouldn't work.
And I suppose, like, I suppose that's mine and Pete's sort of, like, you know, one of the things we care deeply about is like getting incredible people to not be wasting their time on like Web3. Oh god, I forget, make some enemies. And spend their time like on actually important problems like our healthcare system in this country.
Right.
And there are so many bright, talented people that don't think, oh yeah, healthcare is where I want to work. But honestly, like, you know, I used to work in, you know, I was a management consultant. I worked for, you know, I was in the Canary Wharf in top floors of
this your Accenture when you were in
back at Accenture, right? And
right.
You know, everything was about, and so many people will be able to resonate with this, but everybody, it was all of the conversation was about like, oh, actually, it was about how we can get my manager promoted, right? In some senses, rather than like, can we do incredible work and actually deliver value for?
Well, that's partly the issue when you're, I find in those sort of like consultancy slash, you're working for clients, but actually, what you're trying to do is get the client to take your solution.
Yeah,
right. In a, you're trying to consult them and exert your sort of influence over them to. Yeah. Build and run their business the way that you decide that they should. That's not really the same as selling them anything or helping them necessarily.
Yeah. Or more simply, selling the next project, right?
Right.
You do project one so that you can sell project two, right?
Yeah.
And that's completely different to how the NHS operates. It's one of these beautiful spaces where when you work in the space, like, money and profit are so far removed from the day to day. You know, people genuinely care about delivering the best value for their patients. They are just, you know, inhibited by the tools that exist. And I think that was one of the most incredible things when we started working in healthcare. I experienced, I don't know, piece there too, is that like this feeling of, oh my god, like this is something I could die for, you know, like this is something that I can spend a huge amount of time and I've got like, I've actually
it's got huge, it's hugely rewarding having that mission and having that. I completely share it. So I totally understand. It's incredible. It's incredible to be part of something that has a higher purpose.
Yeah. Right. And honestly, that's the thing that, you know, it scares me. It's like, my god, that feeling of purpose and fulfillment, right, in that way, it was something that I never knew I needed
when you were in Canary Wharf.
Yeah, I didn't know, you know, top floor buildings, thinking maybe I needed, you know, like, it was one of those ones in purpose. And
so I've got one more minute.
Yeah,
so just sure. Quickly, what I'd like to just do, I always do this in the last minute, which is really quickly, what keeps you going on your mission through those dark times, through those tough times? What have you guys kind of relied on to, and sort of in a way of sharing that with the listeners in the interest of they might get something from that as well?
Yeah.
Within a minute, no pressure.
We're going to get an answer because we're just doing performance reviews for everybody today. Right. We get to work in this company with some absolutely incredible people.
Right.
Who are so driven, so mission oriented, and want to do their life's best work, and like waking up and working with those people every day, it's a pleasure. You know, life becomes a pleasure, and that's, you know that's what we're doing at the moment. We're like recruiting a lot at the moment. We've got three open roles, different things, and we've just completed a fundraise off the back of Y Combinator, and we are like really looking to, you know, attract incredible people to work in this space.
Yeah.
Because it's a great place to go.
Good. Well, Johan's waving at me, so we got to draw it to the end. But thank you very much, Raj and
Pete. Thank you very much.
HealthTech One. Thank you so much for coming on. And I'll speak to you soon, guys. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Happy birthday, Johan.
Happy birthday, Johan.
Happy birthday, Johan.